Welcome to today's episode. Here's a quick trailer for you. Be sure to stick around and catch the full episode.
So why do offers fail? I'm going to bottom line this for you guys. So offers fail at the end of the day because people have a perception that the value that they're getting is not worth the price that they're paying. What I'm going to share with you here is an endless amount of resources on this subject, but this is the one I like to reference. It's Dr. Robert Cialdini's book, Influence, and the Six Weapons of Influence. A little context here on his book. I like where he came from when he wrote this book. He actually was writing it as an advocate for consumers. He wrote the book because he wanted to improve awareness to the marketplace of what basically Madison Avenue marketing corporations in New York were using to influence the everyday person. And the reality is that, yeah, he did this massive study of influence, very data-driven study, highly recommend the book. If you can describe someone's problem to them as well, if not better than they do, they trust you. And them trusting you is the most important factor in them becoming your client.
Have you ever wondered what event leaders are doing right now to pack their rooms and convert attendees into high-ticket clients? Welcome to the High Profit Event Show, the podcast for experts who want to maximize profits and impact through live events. I'm Rudy Rodriguez, and each week I interview industry leaders to share what's working right now when it comes to filling your events, engaging your audience, and getting clients to enroll into your high-ticket programs. So stick around and be sure to hit that subscribe button. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to today's episode. We have this very special mini-series that I put together here over the next several episodes. What I did is I broke up a presentation that delivered a virtual workshop at MGI Studios in Calgary for a high-level mastermind group where I put down the exact step-by-step formula on how our team over the past 10 years has supported dozens of event leaders and helped them sign up over 10,000 clients into their various programs, resulting in over $15 million in revenue. So I'm going to break that down for you in a handful of modules, step by step. Some people have paid for this course, but I'm actually giving it to you as my podcast listener for free, complimentary. My invitation to you is to tune in, watch today's episode, and come back for the following weeks. And be sure to subscribe so that you remember to come back and finish this mini-series. I look forward to seeing you on the other side.
Let's talk about some offers. All right. Offers that convert. So when it comes to offers that convert, the first and foremost thing I want to do is give you guys a framework of influence. Because at the end of the day, what you're wanting to do is you want to exchange and exchange your service, your product for something else. And you want, or for cash specifically, or maybe barter or another service. But you're wanting to influence another human being to change their behavior. It's not necessarily easy. So the study of influence and really understanding human psychology and behavior, in my opinion, is probably one of the most valuable or the most important skills or studies or things that you can potentially develop. What I'm going to share with you here is an endless amount of resources on this subject, but this is the one I like to reference. It's Dr. Robert Cialdini's book, Influence and the Six Weapons of Influence. A little context here on his book. I like where he came from when he wrote this book. He actually was writing it as an advocate for consumers. He wrote the book because he wanted to improve awareness to the marketplace of what basically Madison Avenue marketing corporations in New York were using to influence the everyday person. And the reality is that, yeah, he did this massive study of influence, very data-driven study, highly recommend the book, but the book ended up being used by marketers and sales professionals to continue to influence the masses. Now, these are things that are, as I say, they're tools. He calls them weapons. I'm just citing exactly what he says in his book. He calls them weapons. I refer to them as tools. Maybe he calls them weapons because he thought that people were using them as weapons, or he thought like these evil corporations were using them as weapons against people. I don't necessarily have that framework. I think they're tools. Just like a hammer, just like a gun, the tool in itself is not good or bad. It's not right or wrong. It's not evil. It's a tool. Like fire, if you use fire, you can make food, warm up your food, cook your food, do a lot of good things with fire, and you can also burn a house down with fire. With a gun, you can protect and you can harm. Same thing. So my encouragement to you, of course, I know this is speaking to the choir, is use these in the framework of service. Don't use this in any unethical manner. So first and foremost, of the six weapons of influence, I'll call them tools of influence moving forward, one is the law of reciprocity. There's actually a case study in this book that he gives of this religious group, and I don't remember the name and I don't remember the location, but I'm sure you've come across something similar, a similar experience to this, where everything they did was based on donations, not just donations, but going out in public and asking people to give them money. They were kind of gypsy-like, but they were like an organized religion. And they weren't doing that great. Their sales were down, their donations were down. And someone in that community got the idea that they're going to go pick a bunch of flowers and they're going to walk up to people and they're going to hand them a flower and then exchange. And then they're going to step back and they're like, put their hand out and say, will you donate something to me? Who's had an experience where you're walking around and someone just gave you something and then they ask you for something in return? And guess what? The likelihood that you gave them something increased dramatically. Why? Because they were eliciting the law of reciprocity. So simply put, it's an internal feeling that when somebody gives me something, I feel like I owe them something in return, whether that's financial, karmic, or otherwise. Okay, I think we can all relate to this notion, but it's something to keep in mind is it's always, this is like a law, almost like a law of physics, but it's a law of human behavior. It's always at play, and the more you give, the more people feel compelled to want to give back to you. All right. Two is commitment. It's actually commitment and consistency. There's a lot more to this one than meets the eye. So this is the notion of small commitments lead to bigger commitments. That's why people say, hey, say yes to this, say yes to this, say yes to this, eventually saying yes to the big thing or the next thing. So small commitments led to big commitments. And there's a thing that also compels us as human beings in our minds that when we start something, we want to finish it. I know some of us don't be like, oh, I'm a quick start and I don't finish things based on my personality, this sort of thing. Yeah, people are at different levels on that spectrum of, oh, I start something, I got to get it done. The reality is that it's part of our human behavior that if we start something, if you see like a little progress bar on the top of your screen, I'm sure the marketing agencies use that all the time. It says like, hey, I'm 10% done. There's a part of your brain that feels psychologically compelled to get that to 100%. If I start something, I feel compelled to finish it. I got to close that loop. It's human behavior. The other thing, and it's under this same chapter in the book, but it's called commitment and consistency. And you'll see it here in the text. It actually say the drive to stay consistent with your past actions and identity. I would make the argument that staying consistent with your identity is probably the strongest force that drives every human being. Making a shift at the level of identity is the most powerful thing that you can do for yourself or you can do for another human being, hopefully in a way that's more supportive of what your goals and objectives are. I'm not saying there's good or bad identity here, but at the end of the day, it's we revert to what is our thermometer based off of our identity. Who am I? Who do I believe myself to be in the world? And that also happens with your clients. When you're speaking to your clients, having an understanding of their identity, who they believe themselves to be, and who they desire themselves to be, and supporting them in making that level of identity. I know there's a whole world of how to go about doing that. I'm not going to do that in this workshop, but that is the most powerful thing that you can do for yourself, you can do for another human. In fact, you go to a lot of these personal development workshops, and that's basically what they're doing. Everything they're doing is leading to this notion of I am a different human being. So that's why I'm seeding with you guys to identify as being an event leader. Because the more you identify with being an event leader, guess what? The more likely you are to do an event, the more likely you are to put yourself out there, the more likely you are to take that risk, the more likely you are to put this date on your calendar. Once you own that identity, those things occur as natural next steps. All right, social proof. Who has walked past a restaurant or a bar or some establishment and you saw a line outside and you just had the thought, man, that must be a good spot? It's an automatic response. It's a human thing. We're like, oh, somebody else has already done the work to figure out whether or not this is safe or this is good, and enough of them have figured it out, so I don't have to think about this, and I'm just going to go ahead and say, it's good, or I should get in that line too. It's pretty bizarre if you think about it. I know I've randomly gotten in lines without having no clue what line I was getting in because it was a long line and I thought it must be good. So I reside in Puerto Rico, and there's this restaurant that's right across the street from me, and the owners are geniuses. However, whatever they do, however they do it, they have a line that goes out the door, and I just see that line getting longer and longer and longer. It's not even like a fancy restaurant or anything. It's just like Puerto Rican food, but they engineer intentionally or unintentionally, so that people are standing in line outside. And I just sit there literally from the balcony and just watch people getting in that line, and it turns into this massive queue for some basic Puerto Rican food. It's crazy. So yeah, we have a tendency to want to do what other people are doing. How does this apply to you and your programs? Obviously, when people are considering working with you, the more validation or proof they have of other people that they identify with, they can relate to, the better. All right, let's go to the next one, liking. So people like people who are like them or like the way they want to be. I know it's like a tongue twister. People like people who like them or like the way they like to be. Say that 10 times fast. So we have a tendency to want to like others that like us. And there was a case study in this book of Influence, specifically where he interviewed or got the information. I don't know if he did the interview directly, but he referenced a study or interview of a gentleman who had the Guinness Book of World Records for having sold the most number of cars. I don't remember if it was used cars or a combination of new and used cars, but he held the record. It was however many thousands of cars and made millions of dollars selling cars. And he didn't own the car dealership. He sold cars. He sold the most cars than anybody else in the world. And then when he was asked, how did he go about doing it? He said, "I have a system." He said, "I have a system where, one, figure out what I like about someone when they come in, when I'm interacting with them, when they're coming in to look for a car. I take note of what I like about them." And what he would do is he would systematically send them a note in the mail. I don't know how often it was, but it was a systematic method. And he would literally put a note in the mail saying, "I like you," or, "This is what I like about you." He would try to give a specific compliment or comment. Very simple. He just focused on figuring out what he likes about people and letting them know what they like about them. And guess what would happen? Well, one, if he gave a compliment, it lists the law of reciprocity, which you're seeing here, and then they would return it and they would like him too, whether they expressed it or not. But they definitely, well, verbally, but they definitely would express it because they'd come back to him, and guess what? They'd buy a car. And as simple as that sounds, eliciting the law of likability and reciprocity in that way made him millions, probably tens of millions of dollars. So the invitation here is constantly ask yourself, what do I like, or at least appreciate, or at least respect about another human being? And how might I communicate that in an ethical way that's, not like trying to flatter somebody, and that will improve your influence? Authority. It's another mental shortcut that we have. We have a tendency to just obey because somebody has a title, because somebody wears a uniform, and it's bizarre. In fact, there was a study that was in this book where I think it was done in California somewhere. They do all these, a lot of these crazy studies in California. But they basically brought people in from the street. They said they paid them to do a study. And what they did is they had them go into this room behind one of those mirrored walls, like they show in prison systems, where you can see the prisoner on the other side, but they can't see you. You guys know what I'm referring to? Can you get the idea? All right. So they're standing behind this mirrored wall. And they have a guy there who's running the experiment. And on the other side of the mirror, they have the person that's being experimented on. The truth is that was an actor. But the person that they were experimenting on was on the other side. And he was connected to like these strobes, kind of these wires. And the person that was doing the experiment would ask the person a question. And effectively, based on the person's response, he would then prompt the actual person who was being tested to push a button to shock that person. So, oh, they didn't answer correctly, push the button, shock that person, electrocute that person, push the button. And you better believe it, people pushed that button. So people pushed the button at first because they started, the shock wasn't that strong. So they just started like a real mild, like a little buzz or whatever, and almost everybody pushes the button at first. But then the experimenter would slowly increase the voltage. It was an actor, so it wasn't actually shocking him, but he would increase the voltage, and then the person would push the button. At some point, people were like, "Oh, whoa, what's going on here? Like, I feel like I'm hurting this person. I don't want to push this button. I'm done with this experiment." At some point, there is a threshold there. So at some point, people gave feedback and would stop. They're like, "No, I don't want to kill this person. I'm not here to execute someone." But here's an interesting thing about this experiment. What do you think the variable was that they tested here? They had a split test. They changed one thing. So here was the test. Lab coat is the difference. Yes. So the person that was directing the experiment in one test wore a lab coat to make himself look like a physician. He had a badge and all of this stuff, looked like a professional, a doctor. And in the other experiment, He did not wear a lab coat, did not wear like the official uniform per se. That was the difference. And what they found is when the person who was directing the sprint wore a lab coat, the people that were pushing the button, their compliance went up dramatically, like dramatically. They stuck around much longer and they electrocuted the person at a much higher rate for a much longer duration. I mean, how bizarre is that? Think about that for a second. That is like how we're wired. Just let that sit. It's an automatic response. So know that this is always happening, whether it's you doing it to you or somebody's doing it, or you're expressing that with someone else. And ultimately, scarcity. This is my favorite funny cheek way of saying is there's nothing more motivating to another human being than a rapidly diminishing supply of something that they want. And the example I'm going to give here, if you can relate to this or you remember this, toilet paper. Yes, I just said toilet paper, and you guys remember exactly what I'm talking about. 2020, toilet paper was all of a sudden the thing. Couldn't find toilet paper on the shelves. People were freaking out. I mean, obviously that applies to food and all sorts of other things, but they couldn't keep toilet paper on the shelf due to COVID and the sort of thing. So people want things that are rapidly diminishing limited supply. It's like this basic notion. So these are the six weapons, influencer tools of influence building. They'll want to make sure you guys have that in your back pocket. So why do offers fail? I'm going to bottom line this for you guys. So offers fail at the end of the day, because people have a perception that the value that they're getting is not worth the price that they're paying. And what is value? And that's like an esoteric, we can sit here and talk about what is value. You should ask yourself, what is value constantly? And what is valuable to the person that I'm interacting with, the people I'm interacting with? In fact, one of my mentors just said, put that question on a post-it note and put it on your screen. What is value? And so I'm going to give a simple definition here. Value is equal to benefit, and I would say perceived benefit, or divided by price, because benefits vary depending on who's looking at the situation. So value is equal to benefit divided by price. At the end of the day, if I'm going to super bottom line this for you, your offer must be perceived as more valuable, as valuable, which means the perceived benefit must greatly outweigh the perceived price. And that price could be in the form of money, could be in the form of time, could be in the form of risk. There's several things inside of that. Now, I'm going to give you a couple of quick specific instances, and do me a favor, I'm not going to go deep into these, but I'm going to say where this might show up, and raise your hand if you've honestly can relate to any of these 7 points that I've shared. Raise your hand if you've ever found yourself in a situation where you're just trying to sell to everyone. You have a thing and you're just trying to sell to everyone that thing. It's not specific or focused or niched. That definitely impacts the perception of value. One, you're not addressing the pain point that people are dealing with. If you ever find yourself relating to, hey, I think my thing's hot, but they're not hungry. Maybe I'm selling steaks, but they're vegetarian, kind of the notion. So lack of differentiation, not being able to be like, hey, how am I different than the next coach, the next person, the next program? So that's another issue. Or show of hands, raise your hand if you've ever struggled to feel like how you can differentiate yourself from someone else. Lack of speed. So at the end of the day, that people want that benefit as rapidly as possible and as low cost as possible. Unfortunately, if the perceived value is like, hey, I'm going to help you get your outcome, but it's only going to take 10 years, people are like, no, thank you. I'm going to go find that pill, that magic pill, which probably doesn't exist. But unfortunately, that's how humans think. That's why these weight loss drugs that are super hot right now, we don't know how they're actually going to impact people long term. But the reality is that right now, people are consuming them like crazy because they're getting the benefit right away. They're losing weight right away. And then uncertainty. What is the probability that I'm going to get the result or the outcome? If people don't perceive that they have a high level of certainty that they're going to get that result or outcome with you or with your service or offer, then that's a factor that influences them. And ultimately, risk reversal. People want to perceive that there is no risk or minimal risk to taking you up on your offer. At the bottom line, if your offer is confusing, people will delay buying. We want to keep things simple. We want to speak in the language of clients and the language of results and pain points. If people feel that you understand their problem as well or better than they do, they will trust you. There's another kind of weird statement to hear. I'm going to say that one more time. If you can describe someone's problem to them as well, if not better than they do, they trust you. And them trusting you is the most important factor in them becoming your client and giving you cash. All right, I'm gonna give you a big picture flow of how to create the components. And then you're actually gonna have an exercise. I'm gonna give you a PDF, a framework to clarify your offer. And you're gonna have the opportunity to really dial that in or enhance the offer that you already have. So first and foremost, it's the problem. We talked about this over and over again. Understanding what the problem is that you're helping solve and making sure that you can describe it as well, if not better than the people that you're solving it for. One of the ways I like to go about doing that is market research, which involves I can read online, do all sorts of reading. AI is a great way to do like general market research, and I personally believe there's nothing that beats actually talking to people and asking them, hey, what is the challenge? What is the problem that you're dealing with? And having some intel. This is my notes, right, from the 5 interviews that I did specifically, so I knew that this is the first thing I need to focus on is making sure that I'm being relevant to what people are sharing. Of course, your offer needs to be a solution to that problem. That's kind of a duh. And then you go about enhancing your offer with bonuses, adding value that differentiates you from other people. And ultimately, ideally, there's a bonus that people be like, well, that bonus alone is worth me paying the price of admission. And risk and urgency. We talked about that in the influence area. People will put off making a decision as long as they possibly can until they have enough reasons to make the decision right now. Everything only exists in the right now. We will put off making decisions, I know I do, until I absolutely have to. For the most part, I prioritize based on what's the deadline, what's the urgency, what's the risk if I don't. And just have to take that into account. People put off until you give them enough logical reasons. So you got to be able to be logical with them, but as well as emotional. What are the emotional reasons to help them move forward? So these are big picture components of an offer. If you're missing any of these parts, bonuses, you might be can go without a bonus, but it really helps, especially if you want to get people moving forward. It's like, wow, the bonus alone is worth it. It's great. So let's talk about weak versus strong offer. I'm going to give you a few examples, and then I'm going to give you the opportunity to clarify your offer. This is one of my favorite modules to cover. I'm going to cover it at a very high level. Come on, guys, come with me to the whiteboard. It's going to be fun. Come on. I keep whiteboards and journals and books. You can tell what I value by that. I was literally going through my parents' garage the other day, figuring out what I need to throw away. And I just can't bring myself to throw away books and journals and whiteboards. There's this idea of your offer. And this, by the way, this right here is kind of like a meta thing I'm going to teach you. It not only applies to your offer, but applies to everything that you do within your business and within your life. But it's this notion of abstract versus concrete, and also tangible versus intangible. So I'm going to give you a quadrant here. We're going to call this I for IT for intangible, not information technology, and T for tangible. And I'm going to say A for abstract and C for concrete. Okay. So I'll make the argument that anytime that we're communicating, we're describing a person, place, or thing, or a situation, we're going to be describing things in one of these four categories. Obviously, there's kind of the intersection of these. Let's call it one, two, three, four. Let me give an example. I'm going to say a word. Let me know which quadrant you think it is. Again, remember, this would be abstract and tangible, would be over here. This would be concrete, and then this would be intangible over here. So I'm just going to say a word. I'm going to say the word food. Yes, so four. Okay, quadrant four, food. Yes, so it's tangible, concrete. Hold on, I used the wrong word here. Let me clarify. I just realized that specific. So abstract and specific here. So I'm going to keep going with this. So the word food. I'm going to go a little bit further. I'm going to say fruit. Does fruit become more specific and tangible for you? You see that? Fruit becomes more specific and tangible. Okay, I'm going to go further. I'm going to say strawberries. You have a more specific and tangible image in your mind. You see that? Now I'm going to go super specific. Chocolate covered strawberry from Whole Foods. Do any of you want a chocolate covered strawberry right now? Yeah, you see all of a sudden where it goes from, yes, food is kind of still an abstract concept because food for me may not be food for another species. It's a bit of an idea. It's like what feeds us. We have interpretations of what that means, but you can see how we go down the line. We can take that all the way down to a chocolate covered strawberry from Whole Foods. We get a lot more specific and tangible. So I'm just putting that as an example here. We're going to continue. So in a moment, I'm going to give you these examples of strong versus weak. And I invite you to think about that frame when you start to write out your offer. Okay, weak versus strong. The more concrete, the more specific, the more tangible, the higher it's going to convert, and the more you're talking about the results that people want. So, weak, I help people transform their health. That's kind of a little bit abstract. Would you agree? Like, what does that mean? Does that mean lose weight? Does that mean recover from terminal illness? Does that mean put on muscle? Like, what does that mean? That's cool. You know what it means, but do they know what it means? What would be better? Hey, I help you lose weight and feel better. Who would rather lose weight and feel better than transform their health? Let's go much better. I help women age 40 or older, 40 plus, lose 15 pounds in 90 days without restrictive dieting or spending hours in the gym. Obviously, you'd have to probably be a woman to identify with that. But you see how that one is much stronger and it's very results and tangible oriented. I'm gonna give a couple more examples just so that it comes home for everybody, not just the women in the room. All right, so I help you scale your business. I help you create more freedom and clarity in your business. Hey, a little bit better. I dig freedom. I dig clarity. Funny enough, I think men tend to like the word freedom more than women, and I think women tend to go towards clarity more than men. So that actually hits both genders. But strong would be, hey, I help you generate 10 to 20 qualified sales conversations per month from your event without having to rely on paid ads. You see that? You see how that's a specific result and also an avoidance of a frustration or pain? It's like, oh my God, I got to pay for ads and learn how to do all that stuff. Let's get into another example. I have three examples for you. I help you run better events, and I help you get more engagements for your events. Okay, maybe at your events. I help you turn your next event into maybe 30 qualified applications and 3 to 5 new high-paying clients. Who would like 3 to 5 new high-paying clients? Ten pay you $10,000 or more dollars. Who would like that? Okay, see how that gets more specific there. All right, now it's your turn. I'm gonna put a PDF, and you're just gonna follow the prompts. It's just gonna ask you a series of questions to clarify your offer and how to frame it in a way that's like specific, tangible, and relevant to your particular audience. It's called the Offer Clarity Worksheet. And let me get to read it out loud to you, so let me frame it so you guys know what's gonna be on it in case somebody can't click on it. So you're gonna ask yourself, where is your current offer? Is it in the scale of like abstract versus specific and tangible? Kind of gauge yourself. Just kind of write out very specific, just like, hey, this is who I help, this is how I help them. I just kind of make that sentence just like you saw in the example. And then how might you make it more concrete? How might you make it more specific, more results oriented? And then also encourage you to add a time frame. Like, hey, I help them in 30 days, 90 days, whatever that might be or less. And then just some prompting questions in there to help you clarify it and perhaps make it a little bit stronger. And then the seventh step is just test your offer. Hey, can I clarify that even more? And then just give yourself a rating 1 to 10. So all of that will be in the worksheet. And then I just encourage you to write this in your journal.
Congratulations on completing the most recent episode of the podcast. I have a special gift for you. If you click the link here near the episode, you'll find a download of a 15-minute offer makeover worksheet that you can use in 15 minutes or less to clarify your offer, make it more irresistible, and ultimately be able to get more high-paying clients at your next live event without having to get more attendees to your event. Pretty cool, right? So stop having to spend more money on advertising or other optimizations when you can just clarify your offer and get more clients. So go ahead and click the link below here, put in your information and download the 15-minute offer makeover worksheet. I look forward to seeing you on our next episode. Take care. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the High Profit Event Show. If you are a seminar leader or thought leader or event service provider who has led or supported profitable, successful events to over 100 people, and you've been effective at enrollment into your high-end coaching, education, mastermind type programs, We're looking for guests. Love to have you on the show. You can go to our website, virtualeventsalesteam.com, click on the podcast tab, and submit an application to be on our show. Also, if you found the show to be valuable, share it with someone who you think might benefit from it. Take a moment, please leave a review, and also subscribe if you haven't already. And lastly, if you have an upcoming event, whether it be virtual or in person, and you'd like to have a conversation about how to fill your coaching, education, mastermind programs fast using events, you're welcome to book a complimentary 15-minute consult with either myself or a member of my team on our website, virtualeventsalesteam.com. Again, this is Rudy Rodriguez, and congratulations on investing the time to listen to this episode. I hope it's been valuable. Have a great day.